What is going on, Ad Free Shows fans? We are back and better than ever with another edition of Strictly Business with Eric Bischoff. I, of course, am John Alba, and Eric, that man right there sipping that coffee. What you got in that mug there?
No, it's just coffee, man. It's barely noon here where I am, and I am packing up the truck, and Mrs. B and I are heading, and Nikki the dog, are heading to Minneapolis. Unfortunately, we have a funeral that we have to attend. But we decided to drive rather than fly because the following week I have to be in Oshkosh, Wisconsin to be a part of a great event there with Mr. Thompson. We're going to have a live 83 weeks. So with all the traveling we're doing, I decided to drive rather than fly, and I'm leaving this afternoon. So everything in my cup is all caffeine, brother. Nothing good. All caffeine.
Gearing and ready to go. It's going to be a busy summer too here with the Ad Free Shows family. We just got the announcement of StarCast 5.
Yep.
We got Top Guy Weekend coming up later this September. It is just locked and loaded, man. You're going to be traveling even more. You're going to need more coffee to get out there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Every year I say, okay, I'm really going to slow down this year. I'm going to really cut back on my travel. I'm going to cut back on, you know, all the stuff I do and really kind of enjoy the summer or enjoy whatever time of the year. And every year it just keeps getting busier and busier. And don't get me wrong, I'm grateful for that. At this stage of my life and career, to be able to have that many things going on that require me to travel is actually a blessing, and I appreciate it. But one of these days, brother, one of these days, I'm going to cut way back on my travel, but it won't be this year.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you over the course of the next few months. It's going to be exciting. We got a lot of great events planned. Make sure you find all that information out at adfreeshows.com. We are a few days late here getting this episode. We've had some logistical things to take care of, but I'd be remiss if we didn't once again thank Mick Pandit for coming on last week's episode. I thought Mick was just tremendous. The audience really seemed to love it. Anything else you want to tie a little bow on top with that one?
No, I just want to echo your sentiments and big shout out to Mick. That was a great show. It was really interesting. A lot of the comments that I got back on social media, you know, it reminded me, and I'm sure this is something that we'll talk about later in this episode as we talk about the news and how things are covered. But man, people hear what they want to hear. You know, you and I did the interview. I know exactly what was said. I went back and listened to it to make sure I wasn't hearing something wrong. But a lot of the social media feedback I got, you know, people were reacting to things that weren't even said.
Really?
Because they're just so emotionally invested in the narrative. And most of the time, I don't think people read or listen in the entirety of whatever it is they're responding to. I think that happens a lot, and not just in wrestling. I think that's, you know, I used to refer to it as a bumper sticker mentality, but it's gone beyond a mentality. It's a bumper sticker culture or a headline culture. And people don't want to take the time to read, man. If they can't get all the information that they want to hear or that they want to read within the first 15 or 30 seconds, they move on. And that's partially the way things are reported, but it's also partially the way people have conditioned themselves to listen or read or learn. People are way too impatient. And that interview was a perfect example. You know, for example, I'll give you something specific.
Yeah, please do.
Because a lot of the responses were of the same tone. Not all of them. A lot of them, you know, a lot of people heard exactly what Mick said, but some people heard what they wanted to hear. And I'm going to paraphrase this response, obviously, but a lot of them were in the general sense of, see, I told you, Eric, AEW is worth a lot more money in streaming than you thought it was. You know, like Mick was putting over AEW's, you know, streaming potential. I think Mick did a great job of analyzing it and breaking things down. But one of the things that at least I took away, and John, maybe you heard it differently. I hope not. This is going to be embarrassing for one of us. but Mick said, you know, AEW has, based on the way a streaming platform would look at the current AEW audience, AEW would have a case to be able to state accurately that they have a solid base of 400,000 viewers per week that would convert to streaming. So in other words, they have approximately 800-900 now. Not all of them are going to convert, according to Mick. but by the pro formas that they use in streaming, they would have a solid case for 400,000 new subscribers that they could sustain. Okay? Not bad. But 400,000 times $10 a month is how much? 4 million. Times 12 is 48 million. I don't know if that's such a good thing. Is somebody going to pay $45 million for something that may generate $48 million in revenue? I don't know. But that's the point. And my point is, what people heard was, more likely read, because not as many people that commented on that interview actually listened to it because it's behind a paywall, right? So they were reacting on social media.
Laundry, man. They read.
And what people heard or read was Mick saying AEW has a solid case for 400,000 viewers. Well, solid means good. You see what I mean? You can interpret a word or a phrase or a statement to suit your own narrative if you don't listen to or read an entire interview.
If I remember correctly, that was in regards to, I was trying to break down like how many additional HBO Max subscribers AEW could potentially bring with them. So that 400,000 number would be on top of HBO Max is already established. So it wouldn't just be like an AEW exclusive streaming service that I was referring to. Yeah,
no, but it doesn't matter. 400. Mm-hmm. What you're really talking about is revenue. Let's keep it simple. If HBO Plus decides to bring AEW on, now this is assuming, of course, that, you know, this is a big assumption here. But let's say, for example, Zaslav and company decide, no, wrestling doesn't really fit on the network, but let's put them over here on HBO Plus. Okay, that's a $45 million decision based on current revenues or current license fees. It's a $45 million commitment to have AEW on HBO Plus. And based on the 400,000 solid new subscribers that AEW could project to bring, that's a total of about $48 million in revenue. Or $48 million in expenses. Excuse me, $45 million in expenses in order to potentially bring in $48 million in revenue. That is not a good return on investment. You would be better off taking that $45 million and putting it in a money market.
Well, we also don't know. We don't know what that landscape is going to look like exactly. Once that time comes for renewal. And
exactly. And that's one of the things that Mick said. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I said weeks ago when this news first broke. It is just too early. Nobody knows anything. We're all speculating. And I'm not suggesting any of the numbers that we talked about are necessarily going to be accurate at the end of the day. Doesn't matter. None of us know. But within the context of the narrative and the conversation, in the discussion, it's important to point out what was said and what wasn't said.
Certainly so. And that's a great point, Eric, because that's going to be a big part of our discussion today.
Can't wait. Because you're a news guy. Because you're a news guy. I can see you. You mucker father. You are just sharpening up the knives because you're a news guy and I'm not. All right. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Media literacy is a very important part of that conversation. And if we're talking about the business of the business on Strictly Business, how about we talk about the business of covering the business on Strictly Business? Wow. And that is the wrestling news industry. Eric, you are one of the most outspoken individuals when it comes to how wrestling has been covered as an entity. I think you bring up a lot of valid points, and I think there's a lot of points of contention I have as well with what your assessment of it is. So I'd like to hear your modern day assessment. Can wrestling journalism exist within the space, the arena of professional wrestling? And if so, how should it exist?
Yes, it can, because it does in some cases. Unfortunately, I think those who actually do a legitimate job of covering wrestling are not the most well-known, haven't been around the longest, I think there's two ends of the spectrum. Yeah, there's, to keep it simple, there's two ends of the spectrum. Those who just like to gossip and project and express themselves by calling it news or journalism, and those who actually practice it. I think Dave Meltzer falls in the previous category. His reporting is not reporting. His journalism is not journalism. He is a fanboy. He is a social misfit fanboy wrapped up and camouflaged as a wrestling journalist. He's wrong as often as he's right. And more importantly than that, Dave Meltzer is an advocate for anybody that will pet him and give him a cookie. He is an AEW advocate. And that's okay. But be that. Don't try to pretend you're a fair journalist. Don't even call yourself a journalist, dipshit, because you're not. There is no journalistic standards or integrity in anything that Dave Meltzer does. Fuck, you can't even structure a sentence.
All right. I don't want this conversation to turn into an FDM-centric episode, but I recognize that Dave Meltzer is kind of the guy that people look at as the...
He and Wade Keller have been around the longest.
They're the establishment, right? That's probably the best way to put it. But would you say that pro wrestling journalism can exist in a way that positively reflects the industry? Because you're saying here that a guy like a Dave Meltzer solely exists to perpetuate rumors and bullshit, as you're arguing.
So support the people that pet him and give him a cookie.
So what does wrestling journalism look like in your opinion then? In your mind, what would a great wrestling journalist do intangibly?
I don't know. Call Jason Powell and ask him what he does and has been doing for a long time. Call Mike Johnson, PW Insider. Ask him how he covers wrestling, because he does and has been for a long time. Wade Keller used to be a clone of Dave Meltzer. He's not anymore. He's really cleaned up his act, I think, in taking the business to a much more professional level. I think Wrestling Inc. does a great job, because they're not advocating, they're not spreading rumors, they're covering the industry, not necessarily reporting as journalists, but covering the business. And that's okay.
What's the difference?
The difference is you're inserting your personal opinion and your likes and dislikes for the people that will pet you and give you a cookie and those that won't. That's an advocate. That's a fanboy. That's just a dirt sheet fanboy. That's somebody who is the king of Reddit. That's not journalism, and that's not even really coverage. It's manufacturing a narrative. And there's a big difference. I know that in the past, and this is not because I have great personal relationships with these people. In many cases, I haven't. In many cases, I've been outspoken against them because of the way they've covered things. But nonetheless, if a story in the past, while I was active in the business, not as a podcaster, but if a story broke that involved me, I would get a call from Mike Johnson to confirm or deny. I would get a call from Jason Powell, and I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago, to confirm or deny. So that at least I had an opportunity, since I was involved in the story, to share my perspective. And then it was up to them to decide what to do with it. Those are the only three guys in the news business, or in a wrestling coverage business, that have ever reached out to me to confirm or deny or get clarification for a news story.
Were you someone that was willing to go on the record in that situation?
Yes.
Even in a corporate setting?
Even in a corporate setting. Now, there were times, admittedly, if it was a legal situation,
sure.
Obviously, I'm not able to comment, but I would explain that. if it was internal proprietary financial business or in any shape, way, shape or form, proprietary business or information that I was contractually not able to discuss, I would explain that. And then whatever is written is written. But when people who just lie, flat out fucking lie and deceive their readers in the audience into thinking that they're journalists, which implies a certain level of integrity, fact-checking, source-checking, that type of thing. When you call yourself a journalist, but you practice no journalistic integrity whatsoever and operate under zero journalistic guidelines, you're not a journalist. You're a dirt sheet fanboy with an agenda. And the three aforementioned individuals that we were discussing are guys that covered the business, had the professionalism to reach out for a confirm or deny, and then made their decisions accordingly. So now, your question was, can it be done and how? It is being done. And those are three examples as to how.
Now, those three individuals you've mentioned and tons of others as well, they contribute to the discourse with this reporting and in the professional way in which you're suggesting, but they also contribute to discourse through editorializing on their own, maybe not necessarily in the story. So can that exist where you provide editorial content while also providing hard news, I guess?
Absolutely. Just be clear to define what you're doing. Don't editorialize in the camouflage of reporting and journalism. Don't insert your editorial opinions and emotions and fanboyitis and disguise it as reporting. That's just fraud.
Can you give us an example of what you mean by that?
There's off the top of my head sitting here right now? No. Can I sit down probably over the course of an hour and a half and scan any number of reports
then,
and I could probably give you hours of it?
Let me hypothesize then. A reporter reports a piece of behind-the-scenes news that Eric Bischoff is considering Mabel as the third member of the NWO. And in that same paragraph, he says that that would be a bad idea because of this. Is that what you're saying, that combination of editorializing and news breaking?
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Eric Bischoff is doing this, and here's why I think it sucks. Well, in the first place, Eric Bischoff was never considering this. And by the way, Dave Meltzer will deny that he ever said that. We have a copy.
I was just pulling shit out of the air there, but yeah.
We have a copy of the newsletter, verbatim what Dave Meltzer said. And I called him out on it. You know how he tried to cover his ass? Well, I got that information from Sean Waltman. So he exposes Sean Waltman as the source. The only problem was Sean Waltman didn't work at WCW. Sean Waltman was making it up. And because Dave Meltzer is such a gutless coward and so unprofessional, rather than picking up the phone, and by the way, in fairness, I would have told Dave I wouldn't tell him anyway, even if it was true. But at least he would have picked up the phone. I would have been able to maintain a little respect because at least he tried. I'm not always, no one, Vince McMahon, Tony Khan, nobody that's running a company is going to be able to answer every question that every reporter that has your phone number wants to know the answer to. Sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes it's not. Doesn't matter. What matters is you make the attempt and you report it accordingly. That's not what, let's just say a hypothetical where someone says Eric Bischoff is doing this and this is why I think it's bad, when the very premise of the narrative is false to begin with.
I just wanted
now,
to...
No, let me follow up.
Yep.
Here's how that could have been presented, where it wouldn't have pissed me off.
Let's hear it.
There is a rumor that Eric Bischoff is considering this, and here's why I think it was bad. Okay, you're establishing that it's a rumor and not a fact. That's what Dave Meltzer does not do. And that's unfortunately what a lot of people, I won't even say a lot of people. I think Dave Meltzer is now in the minority. I think a lot of people do their best to cover wrestling in a professional manner. I mentioned Wrestling Inc. Wrestling Inc. provides at least I, you know, I don't follow it every single day and I don't read every single story. So I'm sure somebody's going to be able to say, "Hey, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about." But overall, when I go, if I'm looking for news, I'm going to go to WrestleZone or I'm going to go to Wrestling Inc. Those are my two go-tos. If I want to really dig in, I'll dig a little deeper. I'll see what Mike Johnson has to say. I'll see what Jason Powell has to say. I'll even see what Wade Keller has to say if I want to dig a little bit deeper. But in just in terms of current updates, I'm WrestleZone or I'm Wrestling. And actually, I do both. I don't pick one over the other. I do them both. And the interviews that I see or the content that I see is often interviews with people involved in the business. I think that's cool as hell. I think that's the way the business should be covered.
Yep.
Unfortunately, because Dave has been around the longest, he's got the largest audience as far as a dirt sheet is considered, maybe not as far as a website is considered, but Dave still has that kind of position in the dirt sheet narrative because he's been around the longest.
So I want to pick up a little from different areas of that there. You'd mentioned WrestleZone, Wrestling Inc. specifically, and I have a lot of friends at both of those entities. I think they, I'm with you, I think they all do a very nice job, but their primary source of content, if they're not doing interviews, I want to make this very clear, and this is something, media literacy is the ultimate term here, and that's kind of relating to what you were talking about earlier. Media literacy being having a full understanding of the context of the news that you're consuming. A website like Wrestling Inc., a website like WrestleZone, for the most part, are aggregators. They are taking content and news reports from other entities, and they're saying, hey, here's what Sean Ross Sapp reported. Here's what Mike Johnson reported. And that's the majority of what their traffic is. So you're saying that you trust them as your news sources, or at least you think they do a very good job at covering the news. A lot of the news that they're getting, and this is not a slight to them, it's how the entire sports journalism and media spectrum works in general, is aggregation. That's a huge part of their business. So with that said, I think it's important to differentiate that, Eric, that aggregation can often lead to poor media literacy from individuals like what you were mentioning earlier, where they probably didn't even listen to our interview with McPandit. They found a paragraph from a Wrestling Inc. or a SC Scoops or whatever, and they base their entire conversation off that. So I think when it comes to that side of the media spectrum with professional wrestling, Eric, it's very important that the audience is aware of how aggregation works and how that can be a tricky slope for some people to consume content with.
I agree. And they are two different, things. One of the reasons why I'll go to, if I go to WrestleZone first on Monday, I'll probably go to Wrestling Inc. first on Tuesday, right? Recognizing that they are aggregators. They make it clear from, you know, this website or from this, you know, newsletter or whatever. They make it clear that this is not their story. This is not their opinion. They are not reporting it as fact. Then it's up to the reader or the consumer to decide whether they want to give any validity to that particular story or article. I like that because it allows me as a consumer to go, okay, that's from Dave Meltzer. That's probably 90% bullshit. Same subject. Oh, this is from somebody else. I'm going to give you another one. Sean Ross Sapp. I know Sean's a little bit of a polarizing personality to some, but there again, I know for a fact, at least he attempts to get two sides of a story or to fact check. I've been on the receiving end of it, which is why I will occasionally, if I'm going to dig deep, hear what Sean has to say. Now, he may be a little over the top to some, not to me. I kind of dig his stuff. I like to give him shit every once in a while.
You do like to give
him shit. See how he reacts to it. He's got to get a little bit of a thicker skin. Come on, Sean. If you're going to be in this business, you got to get a little tougher. And I fuck with him every now and then. And even when I'm not fucking with him, he thinks I am. But I like the way he covers. Compared to, I mean, he's probably not perfect by your standards. I mean, you're a news guy. You know more about this stuff than I do. You were in this business. But as a consumer, I would prefer somebody like Sean that I at least have a little bit of trust in. In Sean's case, I have more than a little bit. But I'll, you know, I'll go to guys like him because I know that they at least attempt to provide accurate information.
I think Sean is the most ethical pro wrestling journalist out there today in terms of how
he's reporting. I'm glad you say that, because I'm not as up to date.
I'll explain why, because and I want to give context here to people who are curious how news stories are reported. I mean, to give my background, guys, if you're not super familiar with it, I worked in TV news for 7 years. I've gone to court over stories that I've reported, and it is a very intense process of reporting news. And I think Sean does all of the things that you are supposed to do as a journalist, which is, for me, and this was my way, and I did a lot of this back during the pandemic. When you're talking to sources and you want to report a story, you have to, I would never run a story, Eric, unless I had multiple people independently confirming the same information to me. Because if multiple people are independent, and when I say independently, that means I'm speaking to people not together, not in a group text, not, I am individually, either they came to me with information or I'm coming to them asking about it. Reporting is essential for source gathering. And then reaching out for comment. Every single story I've ever reported, whether it's about the NBA, Major League Baseball, college basketball, professional wrestling, you go to the PR source for the company or the individual directly involved. That is critical, absolutely critical when reporting news. I know firsthand that Sean does that. I know there's a lot of others who do that as well. And that is how you're supposed to do it. I want to bring this term up to you because I feel like it can sometimes get lost in translation. If I go out there and report something and say, sources are indicating to me, there is a reason I'm saying sources and not, hey, Sean Waltman told me this, right? Like, you are protecting said source, not just so you can continue to get information from them, but also because there's a potential liability there on their end. Did that ever rub you a certain kind of way, especially as things would be reported from underneath you?
No, I have no problem with that because it's identifying that it's a rumor and it's secondhand information and not a fact. I understand protecting sources. I've been a source. I've had people ask me questions on background that I was comfortable with the individual. So I would give them exactly that background, which was really their desire to have context. I've done that, and I appreciated and respected those that operate that way. My problem is with people that don't say Sean Waltman or sources, that just report a rumor as a fact.
So
do one or the other. Do one or the other, but you're
bringing in Mabel rather than sources indicate that Eric Bischoff is bringing in Mabel as a third man.
Right.
Is there a difference between that?
In my mind, there's a hell of a difference.
I agree.
Because you're acknowledging to the audience that it's not a fact. It is a conversation that's being had by somebody. I get that. And look, let's be fair. I'm gonna defend those that are on the outside of the wrestling industry. I mean, the people that are actually in the wrestling industry, not that write about it. Wrestling is one of the hardest businesses to get comment on, probably than any. You know, sports teams have staffs of people whose job it is to work with people like you to give them the information and help them report their stories. Now, granted, they have their own job and agenda. They want their the stories about their organizations to be reported in a positive way, or if it's a negative story, to handle it as best as you can under those circumstances. Wrestling doesn't really have that. Probably more WWE now than ever. They do have, I guess, at least people who attempt to be able to provide information. But let's just be honest, you know, wrestling is not sports. It's a creative endeavor. You know, imagine, you know, trying to call Kevin Costner's office and ask him what the third episode of the new season of Yellowstone is going to be. You're not going to get anything. There's certain proprietary information you're just not going to share. That's true in a lot of businesses. But wrestling may be one of the more difficult. And you're forced, if you're covering wrestling, you're forced to rely or depend or use information that you're hearing from other sources, which is fine. Just identify that. It's either a source or an individual. And at least attempt to try to confirm it, as you do, as a normal course of business. Don't just put it out there as a fact. I think that's just, that's a con. You were at that point, you were misleading people.
Yeah. And I want to make clear, guys, like, I don't report on wrestling news anymore now that I've been in this position where.
Thank God for you, right?
But man, I can't even tell you, because my biggest problem was kind of what you were alluding to before. I feel like as, and it's a good problem, I guess, because as we've seen more legitimate news processes from journalists and how they go about reporting their business, wrestling media literacy has become a lot more bogged down by the fan base, because they're so used to, for so many years, having the industry covered in this way, that when they start to see it covered maybe in a little more of a professional manner, they're almost not sure how to read that. And I guess that's a good problem to have. It's a good change. But it's true, Eric. Like, I would spend days trying to get comment from WWE or AEW about something regarding COVID testing protocols. And I would report something based on the information that I had from multiple sources. I always gave people time to respond to inquiries. And immediately, fan bases would have no idea how to decimate that information. They'd say, oh, well, if it didn't come from AEW itself, if it didn't come from WWE itself, then it's not true. I think it's important that fans understand that most of the time, you're probably not going to get confirmation from an organization about a story, especially if it's one that paints them in a negative light. Did you find yourself in situations like that in WCW?
That I wouldn't give comment on a story because it reflected negatively on me?
Or official comment, I should say.
No, I never backed down from official comments unless they fell into the one of the two categories I discussed earlier. Either it was proprietary information involving storylines or talent or whatever, or it was contractually proprietary because of the nature of our contracts with talent. I wouldn't discuss, for example, how much people were getting paid, you know, or how long, you know, whether or not I was in negotiation with somebody. I can't, but I would say that. If someone were to call me and ask me, can you comment on this negative story about you? It is being reported or suggested, or the rumor is that you did this. Any comment? I'd either give you a comment. Yes, I did. No, I didn't. Or if I did, here's why. Or if it was, again, in one of the previous categories, I'd just say, look, I can't comment on that. And here's why I can't comment. And then it's done. And then whatever anybody wants to report, they can report. But if you don't have the integrity and the professionalism to at least attempt to, as you did in your line of work, to confirm a story and source it and get response from people involved, then you're just a con artist.
I would never run something without at least two sources independently confirming, unless it came from the direct source themselves.
I'm going to do something really shitty here. And I promise, and I'm going to expect you to hold my feet to the fire.
Okay.
But I'm going to give, I can, and I will, in the near future, give you two perfect examples of someone, to remain nameless at this point, who reported as fact two very important stories that are absolutely false. Absolutely 100% false. And I can't do it right now because the story is still developing and I don't want to influence said story with my commentary in the dirt sheet fanboy universe, because it's an ugly place to be. So I'm going to tease everybody
for
an upcoming episode. But whereas in this particular case, had this individual said, sources suggest, sources report, whatever the story is, I wouldn't have had an issue with it. But when you report things that affect people's lives and businesses that are absolutely not false, and it's 100% clear that you didn't even pick up a phone, that's dangerous. That costs people money.
Yep.
That costs people jobs. That costs people anxiety. And that's wrong. It's just wrong.
I do also want to make clear, guys, that it's very important for a journalist to vet their sources and to ensure that they're using a trusted source. And that's gained over time. But I've had sources burn me in the past, and I stopped using them because of that. And sometimes, I hate to use this terminology, but plans do change. You may be told information that is accurate at the time that you're told it, and then something changes. And that doesn't mean that the journalist was wrong, but things do change. Now, I want to take that, and I want to...
That can also be a really nice, just broad, general smokescreen.
I'll give you an example. I'll give you a direct example. So, back in, let's see, it would have been last February 2021, the Tampa Bay Sports Authority had a meeting with WWE. I had six sources in that meeting, Eric. Six independent sources from both sides. And I know for a fact that it had been discussed that WWE was open to 45,000 people each night of WrestleMania. Because remember, that's when they were still bringing people back in for this first in-person event. I had six individual sources tell me as such. So in my news job, because it was relevant to my topic and relevant to my beat, I reported that WWE was considering 45,000 people each night for WrestleMania. Eventually, they decided not to do that, and they capped it at, I believe it was around 20,000 or so each night, 25,000 maybe. My reporting was not wrong. It was 100% discussed, but they ultimately made a different decision. So I want to just clarify that six people didn't all decide to get together to lie to me. You know what I mean? When I say something like that, people have to recognize that at times, depending on the story, things can be circumstantial. Is there anything you'd like to add on that?
No, but I think this, what you did by saying sources report that WWE is considering or is going to move forward with 45,000 people each night, by the fact that you started your story by acknowledging that it's not a fact, it's just what you've heard from sources you consider to be reliable, that's your cover.
So
it's okay.
Things do change. People get hurt.
Contracts expire. Whatever. People decide to, you know, give up wrestling and be a monk and go to a monastery. Whatever the fuck happens. But it's when you report something as fact without acknowledging it, that it's coming from a third party, you have no cover. And then you have, again, I know I'm beating up on Meltzer here because he's the most guilty and the obvious, you know, criminal. But the plans change. Yes, plans do change for a lot of reasons and pretty regularly. But that doesn't excuse you for reporting rumor as fact.
Well, can I interject, if I will, real quick on that? Because that's what I want to ask you about. Is it good or bad for the industry when potential creative plans are reported on? Because I can see an argument on both sides.
I think it's horrible.
Okay.
There is no argument on the other side. In any creative industry, can you imagine, and I don't know fuck all about music, but can you imagine being a current artist and as you're trying to write a new song, having somebody reporting on the lyrics of that song or the music before you even had a chance to finish it or produce it and ultimately release it? Can you imagine what it would look like if you're in the television business, if you're in the creative side of the television, or even on the business, both sides, creative and business, and somehow you've got some dirtbag leak that's on your writing staff that is leaking information out to the television critics of the world before you even had a chance to finish the final draft of a script or a movie? So that the audience can already make up their minds whether they like or dislike something before they even see it. And then depending on the douchebag who's actually writing and leaking this information, it could be designed intentionally because he or she doesn't get petted enough or doesn't get enough cookies, that they're going to intentionally make sure that leaked information involving, you know, a movie or a television series comes out so far in advance before the product itself. And it's designed to denigrate the television series or the writer or the director or the network. Why would it be any difference with wrestling? No, of course not. If anything is fluid in any form of entertainment, it's the creative process. And why would anybody think it's a good idea to report on the work in progress of the creative process is beyond me.
Well, I'll make the devil's advocate argument. Let's take CM Punk, what happened with him with AEW when he came in. It was Sean Ross Sapp's first report that Punk was in conversations about coming in to AEW. And as that steam picked up on those rumors, which were not rumors, evidently, AEW leaned into that, decided, hey, because the word has gotten out, we might have a chance to run the United Center. We're going to do a sellout show, and our second episode of Rampage is going to do massive numbers, and did. It did one of their highest ratings ever for anything AEW television related. They sold out the United Center for the first time, strictly based on something that had been reported as a rumor for creative plans.
Where's your question?
Well, my question is, like, if that's the devil's advocate, is there a downside in that? Because to me, that seems like thumbs up all around.
I think there is a downside, and this will be a little bit granular. And the whole CM Punk, AEW, Sean Ross Sapp reporting it. This is all new information to me. I wasn't aware of all that. Okay. And I believe every syllable of it. So there's no issue there. So Sean Ross Sapp was able to, because he's a legitimate dude, source, confirm from more than one person that they're in negotiations, I presume, correct?
Correct. And then eventually it became he's coming in.
All right, I get it. So Sean did the right thing, the right way, reported that there is, according to sources, these discussions going on. Then AEW decided, well, since it's out, let's take advantage of it. Am I tracking this right?
Yep.
All right. And they announce it, and they sell out the United Center, which, by the way, they were doing before CM Punk.
They had never done it.
Oh, they had never done it?
They had never done it.
Correct it. Have they ever sold out anything else in Chicago?
Well, the much smaller arenas, the United Center was much bigger. Mm-hmm.
All right, so they took advantage of that opportunity to say, okay, as long as it's out there, let's use it. Let's exploit it. It's already out there. The element of surprise is gone, so let's just exploit it. I get that. They sold out the United Center. Fantastic. They did one of the biggest numbers in the history of Rampage on Friday night. How many people watched that show?
It was not just Rampage, one of their biggest numbers ever on TV. I think it was 1.4 million, which is...
No, it wasn't. I
can find the show, let's say.
It was 1.... What show are you talking about? I'll tell you exactly what it was.
Second episode of Rampage.
Second episode of Rampage did less than 1.129 million people.
My apologies. 1.129 is the exact number.
Imagine that, right? Yeah, I actually know what the fuck I'm talking about.
You got something there. Go ahead.
Okay. My point is, what did you get out of that? You got a big number on Rampage. Yay! 1.1. And by the way, that's a good number on a Friday night. I'm not being disparaging on that. Friday night's, like, other than Saturday night, the worst night of the week to have a television show on, especially for 18 to 49 year olds, because most 18 to 49 year olds, usually on a Friday or Saturday night, are out doing what 18 to 49 year olds usually do. Kids, great. They're home. 12 year old kids, they're home. They got nothing to do. So sleep over Bobby's house. You know, 18 to 49 stuff on Friday night. So I don't mean to make light of a 1.129. What'd they do 3 weeks later? I'll let you Google it.
It's a drop. Significant drop.
How big of a drop?
I'd say off the top of my head, probably
60%.
I'd say, yeah, I was going to say probably around that.
So what'd you really get out of it? As opposed to not reacting to that story, even though it was reported on, in my opinion, and probably yours, in a legitimate way. Mm-hmm. AEW reacted to it, exploited it, and they sold out United Center, which is no easy feat. Hats off. Acknowledge that success. But in the long term, What do they get you? Where's CM? What's Rampage doing now? 400? 500? Maybe. No long-term value. It was a short-term, hey, we did it! Zero long-term value, as opposed to bringing that character in a much more dramatic fashion that would have instilled in the long run a sense amongst the audience that you can't miss any one of these shows because shit happens that you didn't know was going to happen. I would have gone the other way based on my experience. I've done it both ways. I'm guilty of both. I committed both crimes, and I would always now, based on experience and having done it both ways, I would always ignore whatever is out there in public and run with my original plan. If I want to surprise the audience, I'm going to surprise the audience because in the long term, and this is the point, it's not just a subjective artistic choice. In the long term, anything and everything that you can do that invests not only in an individual talent, but in your individual show, in the way people feel about your show, convincing people that they can't afford to miss the next episode is the most important job a creator producer has. Otherwise, you're dead in the water. If you don't make people want to watch you next week and give them compelling reasons to do so by creating this urgency, especially in wrestling, man, I can't afford to miss it because they may do some shit I didn't know was coming. That's what people love about wrestling. I've probably been in 25 to 35 different focus groups around the country. And these are focus groups that are put together by research companies that were independent of WWE or WCW or TNA, anywhere I've ever been. And I've listened to very sophisticated research and analysts all end up at the same point when it comes to the question is, why do you enjoy professional wrestling? There's a series of answers. Among the top five is the unpredictable nature of it. Why the fuck would you decide to be predictable if one of the five things that people love the most about the product is that it's unpredictable? That's why I would not react to a story. Now, does it hurt the business? Sure, you don't want it to happen, but you don't have to succumb to it either.
Even if it were to make fans maybe anticipate something a little more and get them excited about something, if it's something that...
Is that short-term, John?
Mm-hmm. I'm just asking.
No, I know, and I'm not criticizing you for asking. I'm just saying, sure, if you want to satisfy people in the short term, absolutely, tickle them to death. You want to make them long-term viewers? You want to create must-see TV? Remember that term, must-see TV? You want to create must-see TV? Be episodic, which means you got to be story-driven, and keep as much to yourself as you possibly can. Keep the audience feeling like, I can't afford to miss this episode. I love this one. I'm going to write this down and watch it next week. Otherwise, you know what happens? Every week, you see, you lose audience, you stay flat, big pop, back down to flat again. I've done it. I've made that mistake. You know, that's why I'm so passionate about it and adamant about it and critical of those that don't understand it, that are in the business. It's simple shit. Every television show that's successful out there follows the same type of formula. That's a dramatic series or scripted series. Got to give even a reality show creates and builds and escalates the arc into an episode. And you've got to tune in next week to see what's going to happen. And guess what? When you tune in next week, they remind you oftentimes of the drama that ensued and is going to be paid off in this week's episode. It's a simple formula.
For the record, my 1.4 million, I confused the highest viewership for Dynamite and Rampage with one another. So I apologize on that.
I know you did. I'm well aware of the 1.4 million and change that AEW got on the premiere of their episode on TNT, and they haven't gotten close to it since. The closest they've gotten is about 1.2.
I'm sure you got that number tattooed right above your hiney there, just as a reminder of what it was.
I got what? No, I do my research. You know, I talk about this stuff. I actually like to know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Well, and WWE did something somewhat similar with the Cody Rhodes stuff, but did not lean into it nearly as heavily as AEW did.
No, I know what I, first of all, this is a little tough for me because I was 110% confident. I knew what the facts were. So, and I knew early on what the facts were and if Cody was signing and if not, and for how much and all that. Okay. So there was no question in my mind as to what was going to happen once the story broke. But somebody, I don't know who it was, did a pretty good job of making it seem like maybe it isn't. No one was really sure. Or at least that's what you saw in the sites, is that there was some ambiguity as to whether or not Cody was really going to show up or not, or was he just doing this to create a double swerve and, you know, come back to AEW. And I found that to be entertaining because I knew for sure. But I liked the effort. I admired the effort.
So I guess to put a bow tie on all this, Eric, if there's one thing, if you had a message for wrestling journalists out there, or someone aspiring to be a wrestling journalist, what would be the one thing about the industry that you would like to get out there for them to know and to hopefully abide by?
Real simple. And just distinguish between a fact and an opinion. Distinguish between reporting and editorial. As long as you keep that line distinct and clear. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's not like I've never done a...
That's the Bruce Pritchard way of doing business. It's okay.
I know. This is so bad, right? I'm just so bad. I got me a podcast. I don't know how to do them. I like Mike Johnson, like Dave Shear, Jason Powell, even, you know, Wade Keller. I say even Wade Keller because I used to treat him just like I treated Dave. I don't anymore. I have a lot of respect for the way Wade does his business. And there are others, Sean Ressop included, and I'm sure there are others that I'm not as familiar with. Just distinguish between what you've heard by acknowledging it as such and what's a fact. And if you've got an opinion about either, make it clear. This is an editorial. This is how I feel about that. But when you merge it all, you become Dave Meltzer and a dirt sheet, and I have nothing but disdain for you. Because people like that hurt the business. They actually hurt it.
I also want to tack on that if you do plan on trying to get into pro wrestling coverage or whatever it may be conscious that these are people that you're covering. And I say that for any form of journalism as well, that even if you have a strong journalist or editorial opinion about something, if you see something on WWE TV, you're like, this is the dumbest shit ever. Or something on AEW TV that you're like, this is the dumbest shit ever. Throwing personal insults at talent or people in the company is probably not the best way to go about establishing credibility for yourself.
And you know what else is so, but I think you're absolutely, you're 1,000% right on that. But what's even more important about what you said is how often does talent have to go into the ring and do what they've been asked to do? They didn't get to vote.
Yeah.
They probably didn't want to do it either. They're probably thinking this is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my career, but guess what? Do it or get fired. So by criticizing the talent for being involved in something that you just don't like because of your sensibilities and what you like about professional wrestling, when you're hurting the individual and being negative about the individual because of your personal subjective tastes, is pretty vicious. And I would imagine that most of the people that are guilty of that wouldn't appreciate it at all if they were criticized, castigated, demeaned publicly because of the way they do their jobs when they have no choice in the way they do their jobs.
And there were many times I had to ask tough questions of people that I really liked as individuals. And I'd always preface, I'd say, hey, it's not personal. It's strictly business. And that's what this is, just strictly business, Eric Bischoff. How about that? Bringing things full circle here. That was good, wasn't
it? You're good, man. I'm going to make up another Emmy. What should we call it? We'll think of it, but we need to make another little award here just because of that fantastic transition to a close.
Every single feature that I did in my TV news career, I bookended the end with how I started it. So we bring it full circle every single time.
You know what one of the most, it's funny that you said that. The end hangs on the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I took a meeting, God, this had to be about 2002 or 2003, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he used to manage like Jennifer Lopez and a bunch of big acts, and he also had his own production company. We were pitching a show to him, Jason Hervey and I, and God, it just bothers me that I can't remember his name. I'll probably think of it as soon as we're done with this. Because Benny Medina.
Okay.
Benny Medina. And Benny got up and he's talking about the way he sees this idea that we're pitching to him. And he got all excited about it. And he said, stop. I want to make one thing really clear. Everything I produce, I use one formula. The end always hangs on the beginning. That was the first time I'd ever heard that.
Yep.
Presented that way. Work for Benny. Works for you. Works for Strictly Business. I'll see you next week, brother. Thank you.
We'll see you guys next week. Take care.